bright. London in April 1940 was a place of great fear and conflict. Everyone was on edge. Civilization itself seemed imperiled. The Germans are marching. They have taken Poland, France, Holland, Belgium, and Czechoslovakia. They now menace Britain. Should Britain negotiate with Germany? The members of the war cabinet bicker. They yell. They lose their control and are divided. Churchill, leading the faction to fight, and Lord Halifax, cautioning that prudence is the way to survive, attempt to usurp one another by any means possible. Their country is on the line, and in historian John Kelly's new book, Never Surrender, he brings us alongside these complex and imperfect men determining the fate of the British Empire. John Kelly specializes in narrative history. He is the author of several books, The Great Mortality, The Graves Are Walking, and Three on the Edge. The new book, Never Surrender, Winston Churchill and Britain's Decision to Fight Nazi Germany in the Fateful Summer of 1940. John Kelly will be doing a Veterans Day event tonight at Oblong Books at 6 o'clock, which will also be filmed by C-SPAN. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But before we do that, we welcome John Kelly to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you with us. So this is, you really take something huge and zoom in and look at a very particular, specific moment and take on that large question. What brought you to that?
Well, first, this is the most romantic moment. I mean, romantic in the old-fashioned sense,
right,
of the 20th century. Everything matters. Everything hangs on what happens in Britain, and it has fascinated me since I was 10 years old. Your former guest was talking about going down to the library and getting books at that age. I would get down and get books on World War II at 10. And then there was, as I got older, and I've read about World War II all my life, four questions really intrigued me. The first was about Neville Chamberlain. He has been blamed for, he's been cited in every war we've been in from 1945 to 2003. I wondered, was he really as bad as he is alleged to have been? And did he really blow it at Munich? The second question that intrigued me was, why did Britain and France lose the Battle of France? On paper, they were well matched with the Germans. They had roughly the same amount of troops. The French had vastly superior tanks than the Germans did. Why did they lose that battle? Thirdly, was what was it like to be to go through those 4 months between May and September of 1940? And as it turned out, the British did polling every single day of that summer. So when I was in England, I went to the National Archives, and you could literally track it hour by hour, those 4 months. And that, so I realized I could really make a great picture of this. And I also wanted to look at Churchill. I greatly admire him, but I have a few more reservations about him than most people. And I wanted to look deeper into what he did and how I wanted to take a look at his greatness and what in what parts he was truly great and what parts maybe he wasn't so great.
How did this become, set us up to how this became the supreme question that it became?
Well, it became the supreme question because literally the fate of the world hung on whether, don't forget, we're talking about Britain and France in 1940 were both really major powers. They were far more powerful militarily than the United States. They were viewed as emblematic of what the West was and the values of the West. And Hitler produced or posed a challenge, really a civilizational challenge. This wasn't like the old European wars where two powers fought and somebody got two or three provinces. The winner got two or three provinces at the end. Hitler wanted to change human civilization. And if he had and if he had had his way, the impact would his empire would have stretched from the Baltic to the Urals, and the changes ethnically, economically, would have been as far more bloody than the changes that the Europeans made when they arrived in the Americas. But that was the scope of his. If you're looking for something to market against, the scope of his ambition was to do in that period, that place between the Baltic and the Urals, what European civilization did in both Americas. That's pretty big.
It's huge. And in the book, you write about this, and I'm fascinated by how realistic was the possibility of seeking a settlement, of actually coming to a settlement
with Germany?
Yes,
it was very realistic. The British could have got terms, and almost any time that summer, and especially after the fall of France, when Hitler sort of made an offer. I think it was on July 16th he made an offer to the British. It was a question of what terms he would be willing to give them. Churchill believed the terms would be unacceptable because they would not permit Britain to continue its rearmament program, and he was absolutely right about that.
Right.
And Halifax, his opponent, wanted to save what could still be saved. What everybody in the British leadership understood that summer, no matter what side of the question they were on, is if Britain chose to fight it out with Germany, it meant goodbye to the empire. That was going to be gone. It had been seriously weakened in the First World War. It meant goodbye to Britain's status as a great power. It meant goodbye, basically, to the British economy. And they were right about those three things. Britain didn't go off of rationing until 1954.
Wow.
On certain items.
Right.
I mean, Britain was the loser in the Second World War because it paid the highest price. Naturally, Germany paid a much higher price and died, but Germany was back on its feet by 1960. Britain wasn't back on its feet. I heard a historian say World War II didn't hit in Britain until the 1970s. Mm. And it was only in 1980s that you began to get a sense of Britain was coming back. And now you see in the last 30 years, it's become what it used to be, but a much smaller version of what it used to be.
You mentioned in the answer to my first question about British morale, and you could track it, and then you went and you looked, and you could see almost this hour-by-hour account. How much did it change? What was the overall morale of the British people at this time?
Well, it was interesting. There were two phases. There was the period in May and early June when when it was clear that the Allies were going to lose the Battle of France, and it also covered the Dunkirk evacuation. And if you look at the morale reports in that 40 days, you see people a kind of emotional cycling, people going from one mood to another mood to another mood within a day, within the same day. And I guess the closest way I could, or the closest analogy to that, is someone who's had a major life crisis, whether it's a divorce or a death, something like that, where all your usual emotional armor breaks down because your reality is broken down. And the cycling was the same as you would see in any really kind of life-changing moment. Beginning of July, Churchill began to steady the public, and he just began to steady it partly with the speeches, but he only made four or five speeches that summer. It was just the quality of his leadership.
Mm.
As you go from July to August, when the Battle of Britain really intensifies, and into September, the first half of September, when the Germans are bombing London regularly, the amazing thing is you just see, you could almost physically feel a resolve in those reports. People are determined they're going to get through this. All of that cycling, that up and down, almost disappears. And that was really Churchill's great achievement. And you can really document it if you read, just go day by day from, May 15th, 1940 to September 15th, 1940. You can track that perfectly.
You say in the book, by the end of May, whatever Churchill might tell the French, the Americans, and the world about British resolve, the reality was a sizable portion of the British public was distraught and frightened. So in that time, you of course, just spoke of his leadership. You also said at the beginning of our conversation that you're critical of Churchill in the book. You take a critical look at Churchill and that. Was it the leadership that ultimately prevailed?
It was leadership that ultimately prevailed. What I am somewhat critical of is Churchill's strategic sense. And that really goes beyond the scope of this book. And it goes the Britain between basically October of 1940 until El Alamein in November 1942 didn't win anything. They won the Battle of Britain. And then they had 2 years where they lost the empire, they lost everything, and they lost every contest. Man for man, they couldn't stand up to the Germans. In truth, as the British historian Max Hastings has said accurately, there was no Western army or Russian that man for man and an even fight could stand up to the Germans.
And final question before we go, and that is, what role did the United States and the partnership between Churchill and Roosevelt have in that?
First you have to remember, 1940, Roosevelt was considering running for unprecedented third term.
Right.
So he was in a delicate political position. He also was not sure that Britain was going to survive, and. Thirdly, what little armament the U.S. had, and it didn't have much at that point, it needed for itself. So the American aid to Britain was relatively small, and it was because for those three reasons. Roosevelt needed to be shown, and Churchill realized this to his credit, he realized that Britain couldn't ask the U.S. for much help. That summer, it had to demonstrate that it could survive and that the aid would follow. But there had to be a demonstration of British will in order to bring America along.
This is Narrative History at its Best. A beautiful book. Really incredible.
Thank you.
Never Surrender, Winston Churchill and Britain's Decision to Fight Nazi Germany in the Fateful Summer of 1940. It is published by Scribner. John Kelly will be at Oblong Books tonight at 6 o'clock for an event at the Oblong Bookstore in Rhinebeck, New York. You can find out more by going to oblongbooks.com. We should note that C-SPAN will be there taping it as well. Oblongbooks.com, the name of the book, Never Surrender. John Kelly, a great pleasure to have you back on the program.
Thank you very much for having me, Jim.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.